Arsenal on the verge of a 27th league win of the campaign. Even the Invincibles didn't win this many league games in 03-04. It goes down to the last day of the season. 5 wins in a row for Arsenal. They're doing all they can do. 1 more game to go in this epic campaign. Saliba's player of the match performance, Leandro Trossard's match-winning goal. It is the 9th time this season in all competitions that Manchester United have been beaten here at home at Old Trafford. It's an unwanted equaling of the club's record for most home defeats in a campaign. But the story today is Arsenal. They are not giving up in this title race without a huge, huge fight. It was a battle today, but Arsenal have done it. Manchester United 0, Arsenal 1.
Yeah, that sweet guitar riff from Sinister Gates leading us in. Nick, you know, it's whether it's your old school or new school, like, you know, which guys do you prefer? Because you got Slash, Sinister Gates, you got Kirk Hammett of Metallica, and then, of course, you got Jimmy Page of Led Zeppelin. You got the old school guys, obviously, Jimi Hendrix, Eric Clapton. But, you know, you just can't go wrong with anybody, with any of them.
Yeah, no, definitely. Absolutely.
But we got an interesting special optics show today. We have a special interest show, special topic show, and we let you do these about once a quarter. And there's nothing more topical now. Everything is done. Everything in Europe is decided except the big prizes, Europa League, Champions League. And, you know, everything else is just basically a formality. Coronation day for everyone is either this Sunday or the next Sunday. It's been an exciting season. We've seen some, and we'll have season recaps, but something that has come to light in the last, this is very much a modern football problem, or if you can, some may not call it a problem, but others do. And, you know, especially when you have traditional leagues like Germany, they would certainly call it a problem. But it's MCOs, or multi-club ownership. And this all started, of course, decades ago, but it took sort of center stage with the City Football Group. And that's where we'll start the journey, is the City Football Group. And the reason that there's so many problems is, obviously, there are a lot of conflict of interests in this, but also not just conflict of interest. The biggest point is, transfer market manipulation, right? So yeah. If you have a player, and we'll talk about this, City Football Group owns Manchester City, Melbourne City, Montevideo City, Troy, Lamel, Palermo, Bahia, New York City, Mumbai City, Girona, Sichuan Jinyu, I guess. Anyways, Yokohama Marinos, that's Dan Marino's team, I guess, the Fighting Dan Marinos of Yokohama, and then Club Bolivar, they're a partner. So we've seen this take full place. Now, City Football Group obviously has excellent lawyers, and they'll lawyer their way out of one issue they're going to have, which is you are not, and UEFA states this, you are not allowed to have more than one club under your ownership umbrella competing in the same UEFA competition. But in 2018-19, Red Bull Salzburg and Red Bull Leipzig, a.k.a. Rasenballsport Leipzig, also known as Lawn Sport Leipzig, because the Germans have strict rules that you're not allowed to put branding within your football club name. So, but they still found a way around it to get the RB initials in there. They were able to attorney their ways out of that, and RB Leipzig and Salzburg have now played multiple competitions within the same calendar year. So I don't, it's the Hirona thing, as soon as you brought this up months ago, I said, it's not going to be an issue. This is this. I mean, it's basically a non-starter because they'll lawyer their way out. Basically saying no person that is in charge of City that has financial day-to-day or transactional day-to-day duties can have those same duties with Hirona. Well, you just put Shawn Michaels in charge of Man City and you put Bret Hart in charge of Hirona and then the problem solved. You don't let Shawn Michaels run the whole thing.
Yeah.
So that's my point behind that is you can easily manipulate or migrate, mitigate that issue. It's not a problem. But let's talk about them first and foremost. So Nick, they burst on the scene, they come in, guns a-blazing, and obviously they are the strongest of these MCOs on the planet in terms of total financial wealth spread across multiple continents, nations, leagues. The crown jewel, obviously, is Man City. Then one might argue that right after them would probably be Hirona at this point. You have Palermo, so they're in Italy, and obviously have an MLS presence. But transfer market manipulation, this is where this comes in. We already talked about player that is going to be highly sought after by a lot of different teams, a lot of different clubs, but he's only going to really go from Hirona to Man City, and that is because they control the narrative there. Man City's been loaning Hirona players for, I think, up to 10 years now. They've been loaning them players. So what this does, though, creates a structure because the infrastructure's in place. These small clubs like a Palermo who basically was in financial dire straits 5-6 years ago, facing bankruptcy, all this stuff. Well, Man City comes in. They put the money pipeline to them. They also give you a prospect pipeline. And all of a sudden, now you have resources and you have abilities and capabilities in both on the training pitch and in tactical, in coaching, preparation, tactical awareness, alignment that you've never had access to, experimentation, and further, first and foremost, player swapping and or transfer market manipulation. So let's talk about them first. This is the big one. And I mean, it needs to be said that after all the success they've had, they've yet to turn a profit. Not one single year, even with a continental treble, they have never turned a profit. They have taken a loss every single year on the sheets, on the books. And now, in typical Wolf of Wall Street form, one might ask, now you might be asking yourself, is any of this legal? And the answer, of course, is of course not. But as we speak today, May 17, 2024, everything against Man City is alleged. But, you know, the judge and jury will be coming out about that this fall. But so talk about them first, like your thoughts. What about City Football Group and
just
the past, present, and future, so to speak?
Yeah, I mean, what sticks out to me is all their assets are worth over $1.5 billion, but their net income was $205 million in the red, and their operating income was $165 million in the red also. Revenue, $544 million in the red. Everything's in the red, man. And we talked about this before we clicked record. And it begs the question of, do these guys even want to turn a profit? You know, I mean, it's just really mind-blowing that all this money is spent and then you're not expecting anything back. And to see that, to see what all this is worth, I mean, you're talking about almost $2 billion in assets, and that is an astronomical amount of money. I mean, you're talking about more than we can fathom. I mean, you know, like, we wouldn't even know what to do with that. And when this all started, man, in 2009, we talked about it. City were, like, you brought up the 8-1 Middlesbrough scoreline. They weren't this team that we know of now. I mean, you were watching before. I knew City when they were under the City Group. You've seen City before all this, and you've seen them, what, championship?
They weren't even good. They were not a good club. They were two times relegated since the Premier League's inception, two times promoted, and they took an 8-1 thrashing in 2009 by Middlesbrough, and they gained the most points they'd ever had in a Premier League season that season, which was, I think, 55. So they finished ninth in the table. They were you can't even call them middling. They were a Bournemouth, Burnley, Sunderland. They were, and I'm talking about new school Sunderland, not old school Sunderland.
Yeah.
Bad Wigan, Nottingham Forest, modern day Leeds. They were modern day Leeds, meaning after 2004. So yeah. They were terrible.
Yeah, and profit isn't something they're really interested in. And, you know, we bring up the charges, man. I was looking today at the charges, and they go all the way back to 2009. They're not reporting manager wages. They're not reporting player wages. Like, there is, like, 50-something instances of that. There is all kinds of instances. And I watched something on those charges that were brought up, and the reason why it's taken so long for these outcomes is because it goes over 10 years. Like we saw Everton get punished and Nottingham Forest get punished relatively quickly, but that's because all their stuff was recent. You're talking about within the last year or two. So right. City, this is coming about. It's supposed to it all should come to a head this summer, is what they're saying. I meant to send you the video, but all those charges stem back to the beginning of all this, man. All this, we bring it up and we say, was it all legal? Like that little clip of Leonardo DiCaprio, like he says, oh, well, of course not. Well, This could be where we find out, you know, what they did was actually 100% illegal. And it then becomes factual, because me and you can speculate till our freaking heads fall off.
Right.
But until they get something done, then we don't know, you know, and all this happening in 2009 is really something that, you know, we both talk about a lot, but it's been a long time coming for us to actually bring this up, man.
Right. So City Football Group is really interested only in the football, but the next one we have up, and at some point I want to say, you're not a business. You're not a business if your goal is not to turn a profit. That's the whole point. They are now almost they're a decade and a half into this project, and they've never turned a profit. You've won numerous league titles. You have won you're only the second English team in history to complete a continental treble. All this stuff, and you're still taking loss. You're still taking a loss. And so, I certainly cannot sit here and tell you that it would be fulfilling for me to win all these things and yet still be in the red. I would look at that and see something's not right here. But as I told you, if you were to do this legitimately, if you were say they're going to buy Blackburn Rovers and organically, I said, Jadon Sancho was in their youth system. Phil Foden is in their youth system. I believe at one point, there's somebody else that was big in there. Maybe Nathan Ake was at one point in their youth. Anyways,
one of the young kids that are coming up now was also playing with Jadon.
Exactly. Cole Palmer was
yeah,
was
you're
part
right.
of there.
Yeah, Cole's a great example.
The only person that all those players that are playing for them is Phil Foden. They would have had to have kept or tried to. They may have been a seller's club. Somebody, you know, Dortmund might have come along and said, you have to sell off Sancho because you need the money. You need to reinvest it. So they sold Sancho because they had no room for him. There's too many. They were playing David Villa and Sergio Aguero and all these guys. Like, you know, they didn't have room for Jadon Sancho. So they sold him out of we don't need him.
Yeah,
but you know, if you
him.
Right the guy, you know, all these players that they had in their youth academy. But then how in the hell did they get those players in their youth academy in the first place? Like, you know, it starts from the bottom up and it works its way up. But if you're going to start a club from ground zero and you're going to work your way up the organic way, you know, it takes a while. You know, you talked about the story of Como, and we talked about in Italy, how they've come from Serie D to Serie A. We've talked about a number of clubs, you know, Luton Town, they've done it. Ipswich has recently crawl back from the depths of hell into the Premier League. So it can be done. It can be done in a more civilized way, as opposed to just one, two, skip a few, 99-100. But at some point, I would be upset with the fact that there's no satisfaction. I'm here to make money at the end of the day. And if you're not making money, you're losing money. And City's football group has still not made any money. And people can say, well, they have a lot of revenue. Revenue is not anything. You look at revenue and you look at losses, and then you have your profit, and they haven't made a profit. It's all about profit. It's not about revenue. It's not about if your outgoing is more than your incoming, you're taking a loss. And that is the definition of a failing business.
Yeah. I guess
people can take it however they want to take it. Like, sporting success, no one's going to argue with, but like your books are so cooked.
It just begs the question: Do you think it matters to the City fans? I mean, do they?
The City fans? No, they've lived their entire life in squalor. I mean, Manchester United has played with them like a yo-yo on a string, like a kid's toy. They still. It's been said that if they win 17 continental trebles, they will still only be the second most popular team within a club within their city.
No, they would.
United are never going to be number two in that town. They're not.
No, never.
City can sit there and get all the little Gen Z zennial assholes from the United States to be their fans that'll bail on them as quickly as they jump on the ship. They'll jump off of it because they're also those are the bronze sexuals that'll, I'm a Heat fan today. Now I'm a Cavs fan. Now I'm a Lakers fan. Oh my God, LeBron. Yeah, No. You stick with your team. If they go 10-72, that's how them's the breaks. You crumble with your team and you come back up with your team. I have no. Don't even look at me. If you're a bandwagon jumper, I can't stand you. So don't even come talk to me. If you see me at Basel, walk the other way. the point is that their loyalty, the fans they've gotten loyalty are only loyal because they're winning. That's my point. They're not organically built. Manchester United, Liverpool, Bayern Munich, Dortmund, you name them, man. Real Madrid, Barcelona. Who else do you want to throw in there? I mean, God, Inter, Milan, Juve, those are organically built over decades and decades and decades. You can do a lot of things, man. You can steal from a lot of things. You can't steal from Father Time. You just can't do that. Yeah, you can't press the fast forward button, and you can do it to where you can say, okay, but it's just understand that it's not real. It's plastic. It's an oasis in the desert. These little teeny boppers that are over here at Cola Kicks buying Air Jordan 1s for a player. They think he's an influencer. They didn't even know he played the game of basketball. They're there. I saw little kids in their City shirts, and it makes me want to puke because if I go and ask them, name me their starting 11 right now, they can't name me three.
No. Or like who played them, in the title winning year of 2018,
who's the ball fraud? Who's the ball fraud? He's like, I don't know. They would not. Oh, Michael Jordan must be the ball fraud. He's just, Oh, the guy whose kicks you're buying, right? That guy. Yeah. That ball fraud. No, I mean, that's the thing is there's City Football Group. Nick, my point in this is that like there it's like a dish in the microwave that if you keep it in too long, it's going to blow up and it's going to splatter all over the microwave. Right now, the temperature's good and you see it slightly boiling and your nacho cheese dip is getting ready. It's nice. It's ready. It's ready to eat. But if, somebody taps you on the shoulder and distracts you and you lose track of the time on the microwave and that thing's going to blow up and it's going to be all over the you got the cleanup. And so that's my point is at what point is losing money and having plastic fans and being, if you strictly say, I am okay with that, then that's fine. There's nothing to be done. I'm telling you if I owned a football club, if you and I partnered up and we bought Preston North End and we got them to a certain place, you and I became the non-millionaire, Ryan Reynolds and what's his name. And we just built this club organically and you said, well, Critty, we're in championship now. But man, we are losing money hand over fist. I'd be like, Nick, there's something wrong then. Like, I don't care. I like that we're in the championship and we've worked our way back up. But if we're losing money, then we're not being a successful business.
Yeah.
losing money in no country and no one, even Donald Trump himself, as dumb as he is, would say, I would think he would say, losing money is bad business. I think that he would say that. I'm pretty sure. So that's, I'm just putting it out there. We're going to talk about a couple more here, but they're the biggest one. And I wanted to point out that they've never turned a profit. Now, the next ones that we talk about have turned lots of profits. I mean, lots of profits. 12 billion cans sold worldwide in 2023. These guys are making money hand over fist, but they've also invested in motocross, extreme sports, Formula One, all this stuff, right? And now they have a 99% ownership, 100% ownership, 100% ownership, and 100% ownership in RB Leipzig, Red Bull Salzburg, Red Bull Bragantino, and Red Bull New York. So that is the Red Bull portfolio percentage owned. And Nick, we'll talk about them next. You follow the Brazilian league pretty well. So we're going to talk about another one, Botafogo, later, who is also part of an MCO. But how would Bragantino benefit off of, or are they benefiting off of Salzburg or Leipzig, or are those two clubs benefiting off of Bragantino, and where does Red Bull New York fit in?
So I will say, and I will say, Citigroup own a team called Bahai, that's named Bahai, B-A-H-A-I. They're in Brazil also, and they are, as since they got ownership of them, they have absolutely injected money, a ton of money into them, and they are now doing very well. Just to add that in there, it seems Brazil's a place.
Who is this now? Bahai? Bahia. Oh, that's him. Yeah, I see him. I just mispronounced them. That was Bahia. Yeah. I said Bahia.
They absolutely
90% ownership Citigroup has in them. Yeah,
and they have turned that team absolutely around. Now, Bragantino. It's funny you brought that up because I've been following Bragantino since before they became Red Bull Bragantino. They were just Bragantino, and they were not very good. They were Serie B, Serie C. I saw them do well, but as soon as Red Bull purchased them, just an absolute injection of that cash and those players. And now they're actually playing in the continental tournament, the Copa Sudamerica and the Libertadores. They participate in those year in and year out now. And it's funny, you'll see players from Bragantino. They're typically the younger Brazilians. You'll see them go off to Salzburg and then possibly to Leipzig. So watching that happen, it's changed that whole club. It's absolutely changed it for the good. That team is incredible to watch. Very high-powered offense, just like you would think with Salzburg and Red Bull Leipzig. So it's made a change for that team, and their fans love it, dude. I'll tell you, those fans aren't against Red Bull being a part of their club, man. Whenever it happened, they immediately were promoted. They got promoted that next season, and they've been up ever since. Top six, I will say. I mean, you still have the big giants in there, Flamengo, Palmeiras. I was going to say Santos, but not Santos. Sao Paulo, Cruzeiro, all those big giants are still there. Grêmio, but they're in the talk now, man, all because of Red Bull. It's actually incredible.
So, do you know of any player swaps that have happened between Bragantino and the two European sides?
I would have to look, man. I know there's some. I know Red Bull had a player, Claudinho, who was about to go to Europe, man. I don't know if he was going to either. It might have been Leipzig, but you're going to laugh. The Russian giant Zenit jumped in and paid a freaking double what the other team was going to pay for. So he ended up going to the Russian side, but he was a big European prospect, and just the Russian people jumped in and grabbed him, the Russian mob, like they always do. But I would have to look, man. There's guys who have gone from that team to go to Salzburg and play. I would have to look quickly. But they're good. I mean, I'm telling you, that youth over there, Bragantino's youth is very good. And what they'll do is they'll send those guys to Salzburg to play. I'm going to look while we're chatting, but it's done very good. There is some positives in it, you know, especially for these supporters.
Well, so the next one is actually where we start to get into the weeds of it. This is where the very, very first conflict of interest comes into play. So Eagle Football Portfolio, you and I know this because we talked about this in depth last fall on this very program. We talked about our good friend who owns, huh?
Our buddy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Our buddy.
Tester. The guy who owns Eagle is John Texter, and then David Blitzer is they own part of Crystal Palace together, and that's where the conflict of interest comes in. We'll get to exactly who owns what here, but basically David Blitzer has Estoril Praia, I guess it's a Portuguese side, yeah. Alcorcon. Spanish side, Beveren, Belgium, ADO Den Haag, which is The Hague in the Netherlands, Brøndby, FC Augsburg, 45% of FC Augsburg.
Yeah,
Augsburg. Which is a little surprising to me. Absolutely. Real Salt Lake, which is a question mark. I don't know exactly how much of Real Salt Lake he owns. Yeah. And then Crystal Palace FC, 18%. Now, the Eagle Football Portfolio has Crystal Palace at 46%. RWD Molenbeek is 80% in Belgium, Olympique Lyonnais 88%, and then Botafogo 90% in Brazil. Now, the club that they own part of Crystal Palace, but one of them owns a club in Belgium, and the other one owns another club in Belgium, and they are direct competitors.
Yeah.
So, this is where we get to the very first MCO, where there's a partnership, but then in that partnership, there's a divide between the two partners because they own separate entities in a different league that are competing entities with each other. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Now, this is where it gets very murky because you could say, well, I want, well, you, so here's the thing. Olise is about to make some negotiations out of Crystal Palace. He's going to be one of the biggest, most sought after transfers this summer, right? So,
100%.
Already talking about. I mean, you heard United wants him really bad. You know, everybody. But the thing is, let's just say, like, if you had a player, okay, well, who's going to fill that gap now? It's like, well, there we have a guy who's playing for Crystal Palace B team, and the guy who says, Tester says, I want him to go play at Molenbeek. And so the other guy says, well, I want him, you know, I don't want him to play at Molenbeek. I want him to go play at Beveren. And they finished 1-2, I believe, like a couple of seasons ago, they finished first. And it's odd. I mean, now you have like under multiple club ownership where you have crossover now. Does that make sense? And it's like,
Now
it gets really hairy in terms of who gets to make decisions. Where does this, like, I mean, because, okay, one owns 45%. You know what I'm saying? Like,
it gets fishy, man. It really does. I mean,
Olympique Lyonnais, when he bought them, were 400 million euros in debt.
Oh my God. That's crazy.
We've talked about how does it happen? How do you win before the oil money? The Lyon have won seven consecutive league titles, which is unheard of. Their women won five trebles. They're the most successful women's football team in the history of the planet Earth is Lyon. They've won five trebles. And when we started talking about them, they were in the relegation zone earlier this season. They, with the win last week, they actually, or was it the week before when they played, they played Marseille or somebody?
They
won 4-3. It was a crazy match.
Oh, yes. It was Lyon. Yeah,
Lille. They moved back up into they had more wins for the first time this season than losses. They were in basically knocking on Europe's door. And if they had beaten PSG in the cup last week, they would have gone to Europa League. It's Wait, have they played that one yet? No, sorry. No. That was the Coppa Italia that I was talking about. That's the one that that they played last week. Juve won that. No, so Lyon still has a shot then at Europe. Yeah. If they okay. So, but 400 million euros in debt, okay? And Crystal Palace supporters do not like this ownership. Because they don't believe, they said, you know, part of the problem is they kept Roy Hodgson for too long. They don't have the best interest of the club at heart. It doesn't feel like their club anymore. It's becoming almost unrecognizable to them. So as much criticism, and I want to say this, as we give all the blood oil money, the owners there, you know, American ownership has not done really that great either in terms of winning over fans or supporters or endearing themselves to the clubs themselves. There's a very nasty connotation when it comes to American ownership in terms of global football. And this guy, so the Eagle Football Portfolio and Mr. Blitzer, his group, they have definitely done nothing to sort of repel that.
Dude, I want to say the Botafogo fans were pissed the other not too long ago. The owner publicly was supporting Flamengo, which is the in-town rival of Botafogo. That's like City owners, City Group, openly saying, "Yeah, go United." Like this guy.
But based on what? Why was he supporting that?
He came out publicly and was supporting Flamengo to win a game, to win a match, and that.
Oh, not against his own club.
No. They were playing someone else. But
He still was cheering on their
in-town rival. And Botafogo fans are like, who is this fucking moron? Like, what is he? These are our rivals, dude. So
let's not talk about the epic collapse Botafogo had last year.
Oh, my gosh. At the end of the season. Yeah. Dude, they should have won the title. They literally bum fumbled it. What, lost or drew their last seven? Like, dude.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, yes. I mean, they are about to win their group in the Copa Libertadores this season, but still, dude, that was an epic collapse. We watched that happen. As soon as we did that episode on him, I swear, that was, like, in the middle of their collapse. I mean, I think while we were recording, they were up on Palmeiras, and they literally blew that match.
Yeah.
It was just an epic collapse. So that, they're not appreciating that him over there, because he's cheering on their freaking in-town rivals.
Lyon has sort of, it seems they're riding the ship. I guess the true results will be seen next season when they start off. Crystal Palace has had a resurgence lately. They've beaten some pretty big boys. And
fired that manager. Yeah.
Botafogo has seemingly off to a good start so far. But I don't know what Molenbeek's doing. But again, this is not the Molenbeek's some of these
– relegated.
Huh?
The Belgian side he has, they're terrible. They're about to get relegated.
Okay, well there's so an answer to that. So there's the sort of the next I guess you would say American ownership behind the Glazers. It seems like this guy Tester is kind of the aggressor there when it comes to now he's. But he's not just interested in like Man United. He's interested in basically building up. We're going to get to Chelsea though at last. That's the one. He's only got two clubs so far, and he says I am itching and ready to add more to the group. So if people thought that it's going to stop there, it's not. It's going to keep going and going. But 777 Partners, this is actually pretty big too. They own 100% of Genoa, which is the oldest club in Italy. Standard Liège, which is a pretty big powerhouse in Belgium. Vasco da Gama, Brazilian powerhouse, Red Star, Melbourne Victory, Hertha Berlin, which is odd that they own 65% of Hertha Berlin, Sevilla, but only 15% of Sevilla, and 94% of Everton.
Oh, wow.
94% of Everton.
Which is huge, English club.
So let's go right to Bluco. Bluco is our boy at Chelsea. So far, he's accumulated two clubs. One is Chelsea FC, and the other one is RC Strasbourg in France.
Yeah, there's been trouble with Salzburg, with Strasbourg and Chelsea too. I think we talked about it quickly. I mean, So the Strasbourg Ultras publicly were saying, we're not going to be your feeder club. They came out, the Ultra posted, and they talked about it, and it was recognized. I think Chelsea might have made a statement about it, but Strasbourg came out publicly and said, we're not going to be your feeder club. Like, we're not, we want to win French titles, and you are treating us like a feeder club. If you don't change something, then we are going to boycott. We're not going to go to the matches. We're not supporting you until you give up ownership. So I will say, I know we're talking about Chelsea and Strasbourg. They actually were publicly fighting the ownership because they're like, this is the problem, that this is why we're talking about it. The feeder club issue is a big deal, man, because who is the feeder club? Like, right. Strasbourg publicly said, we're not doing it. That's not what we're here to do. We want to actually win. And that was a big deal. I think it was about a month ago. Even the Chelsea fan channels were talking about it because this big ultra group in France was like, screw you. That's not what we want to do. Right. So it's a big deal.
Well, let's talk about that because we go right back to the very start of it. Are you – so Strasbourg, I'm not – completely, I'm not an expert on their history by any means. But in the last 20 years, they haven't really done anything. I can unequivocally say that. But there's, like, for a club like Girona, who, you know, what if Citigroup says, well, we'll guarantee you top six in Spain every year. You've never tasted this kind of success. You've been a second or third tier club your entire existence. Just don't, like, if it comes down to you winning La Liga or City winning the Prem, you're always going to come up on the short end. How does a Girona fan feel about that in terms of, hey, top one through six sounds good, you know, no guarantees, but like that, this is air we've never breathed before? Or are you going to at some point get fed up being the little stepbrother? I mean, like, it probably seems nice at first 5 or 6 years. Yeah, this is great, man. Yeah, no problem. We'll be your feeder club. No big deal. You know, take what you want. You know, our Mikasa Sukasa, come in there. Get there's beers in the fridge. You know, go crack one if you want one. The Buffalo Trace is over there. Go pour yourself a glass. Everybody says that when their cousin has, like, fallen on hard times, hey, yeah, I'll put you up for 2 weeks. No big deal. But then 2 weeks becomes 2 months. 2 months becomes 4 months. And you're like, need to get your ass out.
Yeah,
you always get tired of it at some point. When does it seems like Strasbourg from the get go was tired of it.
Yeah,
and that creates. We talked about the two problems it creates with conflict of interest and transfer market manipulation, but you bring on a third problem that we didn't even talk about, which is the supporters groups who, in these massive umbrellas or pyramids of clubs, you know, are you if you're with 777. Is Hertha the feeder? Is Sevilla the feeder? Genoa?
Yeah, exactly.
Who's the feeder club? Yeah. Everton is the biggest club in terms of, like, if I look at this list on name, like, Everton still has a name and they're a big club in like English history. That, I mean, but Sevilla are the final boss in the Europa League every year.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah.
It's not like, Who's the feeder? I mean, like Everton's going to say, look, Sevilla can kiss our ass. Like, we don't, we don't owe them jack. And then, you know, Hertha Berlin's like, well, we're the capital of Germany, blah, blah. It's like, yeah, but you're second division side. Shut your mouth. You know your role. Who are you telling anybody anything to? So it's not the ownership. It's not the MCO. The MCO determines who is 1 through 8. If I own 8 clubs, I rank you 1 through 8. What is my importance level to you, right? The supporters are always going to have their club ranked number 1. That's my point in this, is that for Sevilla, it's only Sevilla. For Everton, it's only Everton. For Hertha, it's only Hertha. So where do you – like, how do you – it's one thing if my boy over here at Chelsea, who's fucked that up, is about as bad as you can the first year –
yeah.
He's juggling 2 clubs. Some of these idiots are juggling 8, 9. Citigroup's got what, 16?
Yeah.
I mean, and okay, Melbourne Pride, honestly, or whoever the hell they are, there's not going to be a lot of crossover between an Australian club and, say, Man City or Genoa. Okay. It's not. But these other clubs here, all in Europe, Everton is in Europe. Sevilla is in Europe. Hertha is in Europe. And I'm not just talking Europe. I'm talking they're all in the top five leagues within Europe. All of them. Yeah. Genoa. All of them are within the top five leagues. So what league takes preference or priority? What club within the league takes priority? Some of them own. I mean, you see what I'm saying? I mean, it's and these supporters club, they'll tolerate it for a minute because it's cash infusion and access to resources that they've never had before. But it gets old because, like you said, at the end of the day, you want to win. You want to win.
Yeah, that's the whole goal. But I agree, man. I was thinking about it. I was actually checking out at the store, man, listening to this Chelsea fan talk about it. And I'm like, man, if I was a fan of Strasbourg, I would be absolutely livid.
Right.
Like, I don't want to be your little brother. Like, we're trying to win over here in France. Like, these people have supported this club. Strasbourg is not that small of a club in France. I mean, I think one of the big French guys started at Strasbourg. I don't want to say Zidane, but like, maybe it might have been Frank Leboeuf, because I've heard him talk about it. He started there. Like, this club is a big club in France, and yet here they are. Like, for example, Audrey Santos. He was bought by Chelsea because he's going to be one of the big Brazilian youngsters coming out. He's already playing on the Brazil national side. I think he was bought from not Santos, but Sao Paulo or one of the big Fluminense, one of the big clubs. And they sent him down to Strasbourg, and Strasbourg's like, we don't want your trash or your guys you don't want to start. And Chelsea's like, look, you're taking them. And that's when the guys were pissed, because they're like, dude, this is not what we're going for. We want to win France. Strasbourg was just in European competition maybe 2-3 years ago, then fell off, and then they were purchased by Boley. And
Todd Boley. Yeah.
Yeah, and now they're kind of being built back up. But you're absolutely right. It's like, when does your welcome get worn out? Like, dude, we're getting you back into contention in France and giving you these players on loan. But, you know, eventually they're going to want to do their own stuff and be on their own. And Chelsea's going to be like, hey, we got you here. So that's the big dilemma, man. I totally get that side of it.
Right. So you have an orphanage. You get more kids and you got more mouths to feed. So the fact is, like, you know, while Reynolds and It's Always Sunny guy, I'll just call him that, they've got Wrexham right now. But let's say they say, well, you know, we've done so well with Wrexham, we want to go buy 1860 Munich. So then Wrexham supporters, they love them right now, because the only focus is Wrexham. Make Wrexham great again, right? So now it's like, well, we're going to do this 1860 thing, and you guys are going to kind of be on your own for a minute. We're going to go check on them, and it's like, well, what about us? And so 1860s, you know, they're the little baby, and the older sibling steps aside, and they don't like it. You know, 1860s getting all the attention. You know, former German champions, been in the third tier way too long. Got to get them back up again. So I'm just saying, hypothetically. That is my dilemma, or would be my fear with it, if I had like all these other clubs, is the fact that, like, you're not keeping a club is not a person. A club is an entity that has millions and millions of supporters, and you're to keep all those millions and millions of supporters happy. And that's that, like, you know, if you have one Dortmund or you have one Bayern or you have one Leeds or whatever, then that's easy to do, because your sole priority and your sole focus is to make that club as successful as possible. But if you start getting somebody sniffs and says, well, you obviously prioritize Lyon over Crystal Palace because you're pumping all this money into Lyon, and now they're back in France's top three again. And poor little Crystal Palace is still down here selling all their assets, selling Olise, selling this guy. And, you know, I would say if they could keep Olise and they could build on it a little bit, hell, Crystal Palace could be a top half of the table club next season. But they'll never live to see that, because every single time, much like a Brighton, they'll have a good, you know, like a good run of games. That person, well, why do they have that? Oh, this one player. Okay, we're going to buy him. Someone's going to snatch him up. It's done. He's not even thinking. And as soon as his agent gets even the slightest hint in the air that that some other club wants him, he's going to be out.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So yeah, it was, It was Frank LeBeuf and Mark Keller, big French internationals. They were on Strasbourg. Yeah. And so they had early time success, but then fell out because of the books are clearly ran by kindergartners. And then that's when the American club came and swooped them up. So
Bully's already said, though, this is just the beginning. So it's not just going to be Strasbourg that's going to be a feeder. Obviously, you have your crown jewel, which is Chelsea. And then, so who else is it going to be? You know, who else is it going to buy? He's publicly stated this is just the beginning. Do we know, you know, Stan Kroenke, who owns Arsenal, are they, you know, is he, Arsenal's had a lot of success the last two seasons. Is he going to expand? Is he going to buy other clubs? But let's talk about the last one, Nick, because these guys are the new kids on the block and they are nowhere near done. They are nowhere near done. But I'm going to ask you, I'm going to name some clubs. Tell me what sounds odd to you. Like when I name these clubs to you, just, I don't know. I can't put my finger on it, but maybe you can help me with this, like the Where's Waldo situation here. So this is the Saudi Public Interest Fund portfolio. They own Al Ittihad. They own Al Ahly. They own Al Nasser. They own Al Hilal. And Al Hilal. And Newcastle United. What? Something about those five. There's one that doesn't sound like the rest, and I can't quite put my finger on it.
Yeah.
But yeah, can you help me out with that? Yeah. Which one was that?
Yeah, it's funny because all those Saudi sides literally run the league.
I was going to say that's the four teams
that are top
that basically hand the trophy off to each other every year.
Yes, they basically. You're absolutely right. It does like a hot potato. Like, here you go. Oh, it's really hot. Let me hand it to you. Oh, like today, for example, Ronaldo and Mitrovic are facing off in the Saudi Bowl. And the title's already won. But, I mean, of course, it's the biggest match in Saudi they play today. But, I mean, no one in the world would know. But they're both owned by the same freaking people. Like, I mean, it's ridiculous over there, man. And for them to get Newcastle was huge, and we're yet to see what they're going to do with Newcastle, because really they've been kind of quiet, if you ask me. I mean, they've done some things, but they're doing it relatively quiet, man. They're not making these huge, crazy things happen, you know? I mean, Tonali ended up getting suspended. He was a big spend for them because he was gambling. I expect them to do a lot this summer, but yeah, I mean, it's just, yeah. That's that one team does stick out like a sore thumb, and there's no way that's all they're doing. There's no
they're going to be yeah
to go into some trouble, and they'll swoop in, man, just like Como got invested with the good midfielder and the other guy who I forget the names, I sent them to you the other day. When they got in financial trouble, these people swoop in and get them up. All they're waiting for is for a big name to get in trouble. They'll swoop them up and then bring them back to perennial powers. And then we'll probably see another City group that won't turn a freaking profit.
It was Fabregas.
Yeah, Fabregas, who doesn't have the credentials to manage, had to literally become an assistant manager because he couldn't coach that team because of FIFA rules.
Yeah. I mean, this is what we're looking at in terms of they said now that they did a study, and right, there's over 6,500 players in the world at the time of the study found themselves within some sort of MCO multi-club ownership pyramid. And since that study's been conducted, it's almost doubled.
Oh, yeah.
That's a lot of players to pick from in terms of transfer market manipulation, player swapping, trades, whatever you want to call it, loan deals, packages, stuff like that, you know, where, you know, I'll swap you a bag of Doritos and these two players for a Coke Zero and that guy.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely. I mean,
and the thing is and I want to ask you this, right? So we hear, cause this is, you brought this up, like, Strasbourg is pissed. So my question is, the guys talk about this all the time when it comes to, well, we don't like VAR and we don't like multi-club ownership and we don't like modern football and all this money. If the product is still good, we're still going to pay for it, right?
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, does any of it matter?
Yeah, that's the question that, you know, needs to be asked. I mean, it's like, if you're winning or you're doing better, like, do you care? But at some point, it's going to matter because either trouble comes or you become that feeder club or you know what I'm saying? Like, at some point, you're going to have to face it. You know what I'm saying? Like, at some point, Strasbourg had to say something. At some point, Nice is going to have to say something to Manchester United because Nice is losing their player to United, or you see what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
because Nice and United are now owned by the same people. And that's something that's been brought up, is they're both going to be in European competition. Like, what's going to happen if they are? Like, you can't have that. So it's eventually going to have to be asked, man, these supporters. And something, I really feel with all these teams being bought and whatnot, something's going to have to be done or relegated or something. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's going to have to be some type of relegation of this.
So regulate the internet, you got to regulate this.
Or just, well, let's say the United, what's his name, who owns United, wants
Glazer.
To get involved with a team, you know, another team that's in the French league or something. Let's say Nates or Nantes, who are in relegation or whatever, or could be going down.
Yeah.
They are in financial trouble and he buys them. Like, there has to be someone to say, you can't do that. You know what I'm saying? Like, there has to be something put in place to where that can't happen. I don't know if there is something in place that says that. You know what I'm saying? What if he just creates some other group and says, gives it a different name and then purchases a club in the same league? Like, there has to be ways around it, and there should be a governing body making sure that stuff like that doesn't happen.
Yes, I agree with you. So this is where I'm going to give the American sports system its praise and its due for once, in the fact that I'll call it the franchise system, if you will. You can't be the owner of the New Orleans Saints and the Atlanta Falcons. You can't do that.
Exactly. Yeah.
And you can own a Canadian Football League team, but there's no pro rel, so they never cross paths. It's just you own a team in a league and you own another team in another league, and those leagues never will ever cross paths in any way, shape, or form. Similarly, you can own the Charleston Battery and you can own, you know, I don't know, Toronto FC. And again, because there's no pro rel in Major League Soccer, Charleston and Toronto, unless it's like what, some open cup or something, they'll never cross paths. But there is some protection in that. There's what do you call it, checks and balances. There's a checks and balances to it where there is no one's getting left out in the cold. It's one for one. Everyone's best interests are you know, being taken into consideration in terms of, you know, most value on game day, best experience on game day, best bang for your buck, best product on the field, on the pitch, on the baseball diamond, on the rink, on the court, wherever you have you. And that's where I say the one benefit of the American way of we are so much better organized in terms of the way that the leagues are run and the way that the teams are run. Because you'll hear a lot of times, you know, these European clubs, well, they don't even know if they're going to have a sporting director. They don't know, you know, like every single American sports team has a general manager, and the general manager talks to the coach. The coach reports to the general manager reports to the president reports to the owner. It's a really intelligent and simple yet effective way of operating.
Yeah.
And it's worked for decades. It's worked for decades and decades and decades. And I don't think Europe ever thought they would have. I mean, I know, like 30 years ago, they never thought they would even consider having this problem. Like, they're like, no, you own a club, you own a club. Like, no one's going to own multiple clubs. Yeah. I mean, like, that's someone always pushes the envelope. And the problem is no one thought of it before the envelope got pushed. There's nothing in. So now you're retroactively going back and writing rules that didn't, you thought didn't need to be written because you never thought the scenario present itself.
Would even happen. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. The NFL had rules. It's like, okay, well, this is, and owners vote on it, if you will. And here's your commissioner's book, and this is how it's going to be run. Whereas over here, in Europe, it's like, well, this guy has said he's going to go buy Lyon and he owns Botafogo. Well, it's like, what do we care about that? Like, I mean, Lyon's about to take the top three players from Botafogo and just raid them.
Yeah. Like, no,
well, they're going to pay him for that. And like, nah, they're just going to give him some nachos. Yeah. They're just going to send them some nachos and some Coke Zero delivery. You know, like, I mean, there's no, that's an extreme example, but there's just, like you said, there's no regulation of it hardly at all. And then if you do have the one regulation which was in place, was the one with the UEFA competitions, and you've already seen Red Bull lawyer their way out of that, and you're about to see Citigroup do it in just a few months with the Champions League.
Yeah, with Girona. So, yeah, the video that we both saw, he talked about when in Europa League, Salzburg played Leipzig, and you remember Salzburg beat him.
Yeah, twice, actually.
Yeah, twice, dude. That's hilarious. Like, I would have never thought. And it's funny, I don't remember when that happened. Like, I must not have been paying attention, but
2018-19.
Yeah, like one of those, right when I moved to Charleston. But yeah, it's just so funny that they got around that, because in no way, shape, or form should a team in a European competition be playing each other when they're the same in the same group. Like, I mean, that just, it makes absolutely no sense. So yeah, something's going to have to be thought of, man. I mean, the NFL did it. You can't own multiple clubs. And now that you have all these groups doing it, it's just, there has to be some type of governing body. And I can't wait to see what they do about Girona and City, because Girona is good enough to possibly win their group. Like, they could win their group. Absolutely. And what are they going to do? They're going to have to get around not facing City. If they're not kicked out or relegated or whatnot next season, then they're going to have to figure out, you know, what to do with that, because for no reason should they be facing each other in a two-leg playoff, dude. That's crazy.
No, and the other thing is too, Nick, is the reason behind, except for the Saudis, that is, apparently the Saudis are getting to WWE and into football because they want to become less dependent on oil, which... You know, they're the Tooth Fairy, Easter Bunny, Santa, I love all that shit. I mean, it's such good storytelling, and I love it. You know, want Emmeline to enjoy it for as long as she can. But if you believe in that, you believe in the Tooth Fairy about the oil thing. I'm sorry. Saudi Arabia is a terrible government. They're a terrible nation, and they do terrible things to people. And I don't believe anything that they do is with good intentions. But for the Americans and the other owners that around the world, whether it be 777 Group or whether it be Todd Boehly, they claim all they want, and I call bullshit on this as well. They just want to have community. They're buying all these clubs up so they can have one, so it can it'll form communities. And like Strasbourg's already told him, we don't want any part of your damn community.
Yeah.
But that's their mission statement, Nick, is that they want to build communities, football communities.
Yeah.
If you buy that, you buy that.
Yeah, you're putting your teeth under your pillow still as an adult if you lose them.
I mean, so I guess quickly before we move on, just real quick, I mean, I only see this continuing before it is regulated or really strictly relegated, if it ever is.
Yeah,
just more people, more clubs, more entities or people or partnerships or nations, in the case of Saudi Arabia, they will continue to buy as many clubs as they possibly can fit under their umbrella until basically the rain doesn't cover it anymore.
Yeah, as much as possible. I mean, why not? Dude, if me and you had an endless supply of money, are you kidding me? We would own half the clubs on the earth, dude. We'd be club crazy. So at the same time, if there's no regulation on it, of course, buy up the clubs if you can. But there has to be something done about it. You know, you can't just, you know, next thing you know, you own a club in each country. And then the UEFA and whatnot is trying to figure out how they're going to do their competition because you own a club in Austria, Croatia, Serbia, Italy, Germany. Like, how you can't, you can't do that. It's going to come down to them regulating this somehow, because within 5 or 10 years, you're going to see Citigroup be 20 or 30 clubs. 777 will have 15. Like, how?
Right.
They're gonna have to put their foot down, man. We're gonna see it, and it's just gonna have to happen. In order for things to continue as they are, it'll have to be stopped.
Right. Well, it is. I think it's
changing football.
I think it's a problem. Maybe now a smaller one than it has the potential to be one day. It could become a very big problem.
Yeah. I mean, this summer has a lot of changes possibly coming for the whole sport. We got the voting in the Premier League. We got cities charges. You got this ownership stuff happening. So there's a lot happening that could change this, the future forecast of this whole sport, man.
Well, let's look real quick to the weekend. This is final match day, so Championship Sunday in England. It's coming down to the final match day, but it really isn't. You know, yeah. We got so 11. I'll be watching 11 o'clock. I won't. I'm not watching any of City and West Ham or Arsenal and Everton. I'm watching Klopp's final match. I mean, obviously for obvious reasons. Anfield. Wolves, 11 a.m. You know, it's going to be an emotional game. I'm probably going to get emotional watching it. I think it's, you know, win, lose, or draw. It's the end of an era. It's been a decade of decadence for Jurgen Klopp at Liverpool.
Did you see the video of Klopp standing alone in the middle of Anfield and then standing in the stands alone?
Yeah.
Yeah. How he just had his hands in his pocket just in the middle of the pitch, like, just staring. I mean, it's big, man. Winning that title in those 8 seasons is one of the biggest accomplishments for somebody because of what City has done to football, man. I mean, thank you for doing that, because I'm sick and tired of seeing them win it. So I'm with you, man. I could care less about the City match. I could care less about the Arsenal match. We both know what's going to happen. If City lose that match, it'll just be an absolute, it'll be ridiculous. And Arsenal somehow bump fumble it, that'd be crazy. But I feel there will be a lot of eyes on that last match for Klopp. So I'm with you on that one.
Yeah. So I just predict it real quick. I think Liverpool they'll win 2-1 over Wolves. I think it'll be a good send off. You know, he's going to go out with 82 points. That's not bad. Not bad at all.
Oh,
and City win 6-1 over West Ham. I'm going to go ahead and call that. They're going to beat West Ham 6-1, and Arsenal will beat Everton 2-0. Won't matter at the end of the day. So City will get the goal differential. They'll get the points. Arsenal come up short. They gave it an excellent effort, but Aston Villa ultimately are the ones that cost them the title 5-6 weeks ago, whenever that was. That was their stumble. And it was the same week that Crystal Palace beat Liverpool. So ultimately, the title was handed to City a long time ago. We just didn't know it yet. Well, we actually did know it, but you know, we tried to hold out hope. Anything else? Let's see. No, everything's decided. Luton are gone. They are done. They have to. They can win. They can still stay up, but Luton have to win 13-0. Let's see if I'm right. Yes, they have to win 13-0, and Forest have to lose, or they can win 12-0 and Forest lose 1-0.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but the goal differential is 12. So Nottingham Forest have 12 and the 3 points on them. So even if Nottingham Forest lose and Luton win, Luton's still going down. The goal differential is just too great. So it's been nice knowing you, Luton. Burnley, Sheffield, see you back where you belong. Forest, survives despite the point deduction. So a little story there. Chelsea back from the dead, Nick. Four winners. They haven't lost in their last five. They've won four straight, 12 points out of 12. They are now 3 points, and they have the goal differential advantage, mind you, on Spurs. So if Spurs drop, and I kid you not, if Spurs lose this weekend and it's against Sheffield, I don't know. I mean, Sheffield gave them a great match the first half of the season. But if Spurs lose and Chelsea beat Bournemouth, Chelsea are going to go from basically, what was it, 12th place like 2 months ago to the Europa League in a matter of basically 8 match days, which is going to be just an insane finish. But no matter what, they're going to go to Europe. Newcastle has an even better goal differential, but they have to win. They have to hope they're going to need Chelsea to lose to get to. So there's still some Conference League stuff available. United look like they are pretty much done. Yeah. I think with Europe, I don't think there's any shot. Is there any? I don't think there's any shot they get Europe, right?
No. I'm pretty sure because what's going on with Newcastle, Chelsea, and Tottenham, they're done, dude. They even that win against Newcastle meant nothing.
Oh yeah, I mean it definitely meant nothing. But I think that they're not showing all the stuff. I don't know if it's not showing me all the it doesn't even show me Conference League on England. I don't know why this is on.
It's funny because on Flash Score, I don't even see that. I have to go to the different app to even look at Conference League stuff for Premier League. And let me see here. I think we're looking at Chelsea United. Let's see. That's the Women's League. Oh my gosh, I need to go to Sunday. Why am I on the Women's League? Okay, so you got. Let me go to Chelsea here. Oh, Sheffield, Tottenham, we'll look at that. So, it's Chelsea's in sixth. They get the Conference League, and fifth place gets the Europa, and that's it. But remember, if United win the FA Cup, that puts the seventh place team in – or no, is it City? If City win the FA Cup, which they probably will, it puts – because they already got their spot, it puts Newcastle into –
Yes. So then that means if somehow by the grace of God that United can finish seventh, they could get Conference League.
Yes. Or if United beat City in the FA Cup final, they will get Europa League.
Okay, well that's not gonna happen. We all know that's not gonna happen. So that means United have to beat Brighton and Newcastle have to lose to Brentford. And then Man City wins the FA Cup, and then United would get the Conference League.
Yes.
And I almost want them to get Conference League.
So do I, dude. How nice would it be to see them play Hagsplit, Partizan?
Yeah.
Like, oh my gosh, dude. Travel to the depths of Serbia. Travel to the depths of Poland. Please. I would love it. Oh my God. They'd probably lose, dude. I'm going to be honest with you. They'd probably lose a few.
Well, looking at the let's look at the playoffs real quick, man. We got Leeds United destroyed Norwich City yesterday 4-0. Yeah,
Norwich already fired their manager this morning. They said, "Yep, you got us in the playoff. Good job. Way to embarrass us. Second leg, you're fired." They have already fired him. Standards are high at Norwich. You don't get us into the Prem, you are fired. So he's gone.
Well, he's gone. Leeds is a step closer to getting back to the top flight. West Brom and Southampton play today at 3 p.m. So we'll be a little bit closer to a resolution there with that. But Leeds, obviously, I mean, you got to think they're the favorites right now, especially after that ass whooping they handed out yesterday. And If you're looking at the Spanish league right now, again, a lot of these leagues, man, it's just a matter of kind of finishing it out. You have some separation now. We talked about the relegation battle a couple weeks ago in Spain. Mallorca's kind of got some separation now, 4 points between them and Cadiz. So it looks like them Cadiz, Granada, and Almeria are going back down. And up for grabs is, of course, you know, we've got Real Betis is still fighting for Conference League, Sociedad. They need a miracle to get Europa League, and Athletic Bilbao is basically in Europa League. Top four, the one new club to come to the fray, as we said this year, is Girona. They're the new kids on the block in top four, but Real Madrid, Barca, Girona, Atletico Madrid, it's basically business as usual in Spain in terms of, like, you know, the typical players, except for that one little club, Girona. Well, interesting to see what they're going to do in Champions League next year. Just really what kind of roster they're going to have, and also how much attention they're going to get on them, being, as you know, they're in the most hated football group in the country. But hey, Lyon won again. So they have one match day left, obviously, and that's going to be this weekend. And the French league is coming to an abrupt end, but They've won three on the bounce now. Lyon, nine points out of nine. They now have 50 points. And I remember a time when they basically were sitting on like 7 points forever. Yeah. They just were sitting down there. So they're in seventh place now, up from, at one point, they were 18th. They were dead last. They've come from 18th to seventh. They find themselves dead even on points with Lens. But the problem is, they have a negative 7 goal differential from the ass whoopings they took earlier this year. Lens is plus 8 in goal differential. So they have to win. If they can beat Lens, then I think that, again, Lyon play for the French Cup. So they could potentially
go that route
to get to the Europa League. But they play Strasbourg, of all teams. go figure. Lens play Montpellier. And then, it's not the most exciting finish here, but I think the Lyon story personally is a pretty cool one, considering where they were, where they came from, and all that debt, man, 400 million euros in debt. I don't even, how does Lyon get 400 million euros in debt?
I mean, how in the world, dude? That person who is in control of that should be arrested, dude. That's criminal, dude.
Now, the hard one, Nick, is going to be this. And we got two match days left here. This is the second to last. Championship Sunday and all that stuff will be next weekend in Italy. But it's coming down to the wire. We have so much tight space between – you have five Champions League spots. Atalanta's got the fifth one right now. Roma is 3 points behind them with two match days to go. Goal differential way in Atalanta's favor. So Roma's got to win this thing outright. They can't finish even on points. They lost last week, which is huge. That crushed them big time. They haven't won their last three. They've only won one out of the last five, as a matter of fact. But Lazio at 59 points, still hanging around the European places. They still have a shot at it. And but the relegation battle, man, between, this is insane, between 17th and 13th, there's only separation of 5 points. So any one of those teams, like if you just have a bad day at the office, it can really impact your standing in terms of relegation. We talked about the flip-flop. You said a couple weeks ago, Udinese. Udinese is now 33 points, 1 point ahead of Empoli. Sassuolo, pretty much done. I think they're pretty much done. They're 19. Salernitana's been done. But Empoli, Frosinone, Cagliari, Udinese, Verona, and Lecce, all technically still within the relegation. That's a third of your table almost.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, to have all that at the end of the season, it's funny we talked about it when I saw you the other day. You were like, dude, everybody's just playing each other. Like they literally.
Yeah, it's almost like they planned this.
Yeah, and they planned it out who the bottom was going to be. And now they all have to win. Like if you do not win, you are pretty much in trouble for the relegation, man. I mean, Sassuolo have no choice but to win. But Empoli, Frosinone, the Cagliari, Udinese, Verona, like, they lose. They're in serious trouble for Serie B, and no one wants to go down there. So, big.
Well, the final ones are Germany, and this one's interesting because Union Berlin, who we thought were safe just a few weeks ago, they were, like, hanging around 12th, 13th. They now find themselves in the relegation playoff spot in 16th. They've lost four of their last five. They haven't won any of their last five. I mean, just red X's all over the place, man. It's bad. Yeah. Just as bad as it was at the beginning of the season, and they don't have Champions League football to blame on it this time. Cologne, believe it or not, they won last week. So technically with a win and a decent a sizable win and a Union Berlin loss, and we'll see who they play real quick, because Union plays Freiburg. They host Freiburg. Cologne is away to Heidenheim, so I don't see this happening. But in theory, if Cologne could beat Heidenheim 2-0, let's say, and Union Berlin lose 2-0, then Cologne would jump in the 16th spot. Union Berlin would go directly down, and Cologne would be able to save themselves. Mainz are – they haven't lost in their last five, so they've come they've done a pretty remarkable recovery job here. They are not out of it yet, though. If Union Berlin wins and Mainz loses, then Mainz is right back in 16th. They have to play in the relegation spot then against the third team from the second Bundesliga. And I think I'm looking at this. It looks like Bochum maybe they definitely have the best position of anyone, but they are also not that great. They're at 33 points. They are separated by 3 points between 16th and 14th, so they could technically still drop if, I mean, just every, well, yeah, if everything would have to go against them, but they're pretty safe. So I think Union hold on to 16, though, man. I just don't see Cologne. I don't see Cologne coming from behind, from beyond that.
And Mainz has been playing so well. Like, they haven't lost since that 8-1. Thrashing from Bayern Munich all the way in March. So they really got themselves out of that hole, and Union Berlin just out of nowhere dropped to that playoff spot. So I don't see Union Berlin getting out of that spot, and then they'll have to play in that playoff, which usually we see the top tier side come out on top of that, but that's, you know, usually at the expense of Hamburg, and Hamburg won't be playing in that. It'll be Dusseldorf. So yeah, man, we could see Union back down. We could.
You know, it's funny too, because I think with 46 points, they have 11 wins, 13 draws, and 9 losses. If Dortmund win the Champions League, then that means that Germany gets a sixth team into the Champions League next season. But Eintracht Frankfurt would be the luckiest SOBs on the planet, because they've won one match in their last five.
46 points.
They have 46 points. And they technically, and I guess Hoffenheim too, because Hoffenheim's right there. They're only 3 points behind them. Yeah. Hoffenheim or Frankfurt, with Dortmund pulling off the upset, either one of them could still make Champions League.
Yeah.
That is insane to think about.
Yeah. Well, the whole world wants to see BVB, so hopefully they'll get that spot. I mean, Frankfurt winning, having 46 points and making Champions League would be the craziest.
It would be insane. I mean, no one has ever made a Champions League with that point total.
No, I mean, 40, that's half of what the winner have in the freaking for the title, dude. That's crazy.
Yeah. It's insane. I mean, and of course, we'd be foolish not to mention the fact that this week is also, tomorrow is the last day in Germany, and we're going to see potentially an invincible team in Germany in Leverkusen. All they have to do, one more match, that's it. They have to beat at home Augsburg, and if they do that, they will go 28 wins, 6 draws, no losses, 90 points, a perfect season in the Bundesliga, and that has just been the talk of the town, obviously, and they're only 2 matches away from the perfect season, the perfect calendar season, which has never been done in the history of the sport. So we're getting really close, Nick. I mean, honestly, you look at beyond Klopp departing and maybe a few little relegation battles here and there, that Leverkusen story is obviously the last big one that's outstanding.
Yeah. Yeah, and Augsburg haven't won. They've won one match out of their last, like, 8. So, yeah.
Javi's really going to be trying to win this one, too. He ain't going to be messing around.
Yeah, Invincible League for Leverkusen, of all people, is massive, let alone Invincible period in any league. You don't see that. And then for them to possibly win out, I mean, I don't see them losing. If they do, it would be very disappointing at this point. I mean, 10 matches ago, sure, like, whatever, okay, cool, okay, we won the title, who cares? But now that you're this close, you can't blow it. You've got to beat, I'm trying to remember, they play... Who do they play in the final? Europa? I forgot already.
Oh, they play Atalanta.
Oh, yeah. So they got that. That'll probably be their hardest test. That will be their hardest test, because Kaiserslautern, they'll they should win easily. And then Augsburg. So, yeah, it's definitely the – I think it's the story of the year, man. I'll never see this again. So, I honestly do. Of course, if BVB win Champions League, that'll be right there with it just because that is crazy too. And it's all coming out of Germany, man. Who would have thought?
Yeah, it was it you that sent me the clip? It was Alexi Lawless the other week saying he's or someone about Germany being the best league in the world or something. Yeah, anyways, it was a decent clip. I'm not a big Alexi Lawless fan, but anyways, I mean, in terms of like, I don't know, just pure surprise element this year, I'd say it had to be.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Man. I don't think no one saw Dortmund do what they were going to do in Europe. Nobody. And they've done it. And no one thought, I mean, you don't see the prime Pep teams at Bayern didn't go undefeated. They would lose one or two. They would put up a shit lineup out against Augsburg or Mainz at the end of the season. They would lose 1-0. And Pep, the prime Jupp Heynckes teams, those Bayern teams from 10 years ago, they lost matches. They even lost matches. And Leverkusen are a cat's whisker away from going invincible in the Bundesliga, which is just unheard of.
Yeah,
it's amazing, and then to add to that, you went undefeated through your domestic cup competition and through one of the two biggest club competitions in the world, that being the Europa League. You didn't lose a single match, group stage, knockout stage, nothing. I mean, it's just when you take it, if you really sit there in your chair and you think about it. In depth for a while, you realize what an accomplishment he's on the Xabi Alonso and Leverkusen on the verge of.
Yeah, no, it's just, it really is mind blowing, man. We talk about it. We have for a while, and we just, it's something we'll never see again. Hands down.
That and the fact that, like I said, then you add into the account that Dortmund's magical season in Europe. And I mean, Leverkusen and Dortmund you have to say this, Leverkusen and Dortmund have been the two biggest surprises internationally and domestically in this whole entire season of anybody.
Oh, big time. Yeah. I wouldn't disagree with that at all. I just, we need to see these, we got two more weeks. We need to see them all finish it out. And
it's so funny that you said that when people take Dortmund's manager and they're like, ah, what he's done is really great, but no, thanks.
Yeah. They're like, yeah, one of the United guys was like, are you crazy? He's like, I want that guy.
Yeah.
I mean, domestically, yeah, just nothing impressive, man. And the run that they've had in Champions League, you still got to finish it out. So to say that you would take him right now, You'd be, I don't want to say crazy, but like, come on, you got to finish things out. And then what he's blown from last season, I mean, that alone would try to want to, I mean, I wouldn't want him. If I were a Liverpool supporter, I would have never wanted that guy to touch my team. So yeah definitely, man.
So this is the final match. This is the final match for Dortmund before they face Real Madrid. Okay. They play last place Darmstadt. Not only do they play last place Darmstadt, they host last place Darmstadt. Now, I have made jokes this season that like the last club that the Dortmund want to play is Darmstadt.
Yeah. Oh, I know.
I need you, Nick, to predict the final score. I don't give a damn about Leverkusen and Augsburg. Does Darmstadt leave the last impression they have because they're going down, big time going down? This is the final match they could have for many, many, many years in the top flight. What is the final going to be between Dortmund and Darmstadt at the Westfalenstadion? So final game in the Bundesliga for Darmstadt, final tune-up game for Dortmund before Real Madrid. What's the final score?
Darmstadt just lost to Hoffenheim in their own ground, 6-0.
Yeah.
BVB are a 2.5-goal favorite. I'll say 5-0. I think they'll drop five on him.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I do. I think they'll drop five on him. They're literally minus 700 just to win. You would have to bet $700 to win 100 just on the win.
Okay.
You'd have to take the minus 2.5.
God, I would not take that. I still wouldn't take it. I still wouldn't take it. I still wouldn't take it.
Are going to light them up at home. They're excited for this Champions League. I think it'll be 5-0. I'll say 4-5-0. I think Sancho will have a couple. They'll play the kid, Mbolo or whatever his name is.
It's not Mbolo. You keep calling him Mbolo. Mukoko.
Mukoko.
Yeah, Mukoko.
They'll play him. He'll get a couple.
You got to think. This is actually you think about this, right? Like, this would be normally under normal circumstances, this would just be the end of the season. Thank you. Good night. We'll see you in August. But this is Dortmund's last chance to say thanks to the fans before they go play in the final of the biggest club competition in the world. So they get to say, you know, thank you for your support. We're going to do proud by you in 2 weeks, and we're going to bring home the double rabbit ears. This is their chance to say goodbye and thank you. And I hadn't thought about that. I was going to go with a 1-1. Thanks to that, I think Dortmund win 2-1. I think they squeak out a win. Royce. Yeah, I do. I think it's going to be, I think Darmstadt are just like, fuck you. We don't like any of you assholes. We never liked any of you. So we're going to go out there. We're going to kick people in the shin. We're going to, you know, so I think Marco Royce needs to be very careful because they're going to start him. I guarantee you he starts tomorrow.
Yeah, he has to.
And yeah, his final home match. And Darmstadt's like, we're taking out ACLs, bro. We don't care. Like, we don't care. We're going to that dude's good. If you thought missing the 2014 World Cup was bad, wait till you miss the Champions League final against Real Madrid. That's going to really piss you off.
That would be classic for him.
Oh yeah, it would be the most Marco Royce thing that Marco Royce could do.
He's gonna sprain his ankle, dude. He'll be out for 4 weeks, and he won't even get to play in the Champions League final.
Well, that would.
I hope not. But would you be surprised?
No.
Of course not.
I don't know. No, but I'm just saying. I'll go with a 2-1 Dortmund win. Sancho scores.
Dortmund just beat Augsburg 5-1. I think at home, man, everybody's excited. Darmstadt is embarrassing right now. 2-1, it'll probably be more.
Didn't
close
someone just like beat that. Dortmund 3-0?
Yeah. Didn't
Mainz. Mainz beat them 3-0.
Yeah, but it was away. You got the yellow wall behind you. You got Reus leaving. Marco's leaving. You got the Champions League final coming up. The energy is going to be so out the freaking park. They're going to have flares. They're going to be going crazy. Reus is saying goodbye. I think they'll tear Darmstadt up. Last time they played Darmstadt at home, they beat him 6-0. Sure, it was in 2016. We were all still wearing diapers. I mean, it just, I. 6-0 last time. It'll be a repeat. We'll get 5-0.
All right. Well, I'm not going to argue it. This is just one of those matches where Dortmund pulls a Dortmund. I mean, everything magical that they've done in the Champions League, it reverses itself domestically.
Yeah, in domestic.
This is so bad. All right. Horrible. Well, next week we're going to wrap up. We'll have official wrap ups, Nick, next week of England, official wrap ups of France, official wrap up of Germany. And then we can obviously have one more week of Italy and Spain. And then we're done. We're done for the year. And we'll start previewing we'll talk next week about the Europa League final. And then we'll preview next. And after that, we'll preview the Champions League final. We'll do a whole show talking about Borussia Dortmund, Real Madrid, what's riding on this, what we think is going to happen, all the nasty, dirty politics, all the conspiracy theories, all the stuff we want to put out there, we'll put it out there. We'll talk about some of our teams of the year in the leagues that are wrapping up this weekend. We'll talk about also some of the teams that are below, like, you know, where they were talking about Leicester was the greatest championship side in history, and then they kind of took a nosedive in the second half of the season. I wouldn't consider them the best championship side of all time. They did have a great year. They're going back up, but you know, we'll just talk about who we think, you know, some of the big players were, and who to watch maybe next season. I think Leicester could be exciting. I think Ipswich is going to be exciting to watch. It's going to be interesting to see St. Pauli back in the top tier in Germany again. Yes. It's going to be nice.
Yes.
Very and happy. Yeah, Kiel. I mean, Kiel's just another one in a long line of
first German
clubs that have never tasted the first tier that are going to go up there and like Darmstadt did in 2015. They're going to fuck around and find out.
Probably so. I would love to see Kiel do good, but I mean, I could wish and hope in one hand and crap in the other, and we know which one's going to fill up first. So, I definitely wish to see them well. Kiel's been fun to watch. St. Pauli, I'm excited for. It's really hilarious that they have made it in, and their big brother Hamburg is still in the depths of hell. So this will be exciting, man. Hell, by the time we get done with Champions League final, covering the final of that, we'll be going into Euros too, man. So we got some really exciting stuff coming up, man. We really do. Like, you would think off season is no fun, but we're going to be going into Copa America and Euros here real soon.
Oh, this off season is going to be a lot of fun. We're going to have a lot of fun with Europe, with European Championship, Copa America. It's going to be great. But we have some business we have to wrap up in the next 2 weeks with the leagues, and then talk about our teams of the season. And then it's all hands on deck for the Champions League final. And from there, we're going to talk about transfers and two massive international competitions this summer, which I'm very much looking forward to.
Oh, big time.
All right, sir. Well, did you have anything else that you wanted to say before we wrap this up here on this week's Basement?
No, man. I'm good to go. I'm ready. All right. About to gear up for Southampton. I'll be listening to that.
I just want Leeds to win, basically. Yeah. I don't care who's out. I don't care about West Brom and South. I mean, anyone can win, but I want Leeds to go back up. I have a soft spot in my heart for Leeds.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I like Leeds. Leeds are tend to favor Americans too. So this is a consolation game. I think Leeds will beat Southampton or West Brom. So I'm with you. But other than that, man, I'm ready, man. Ready for this beautiful weekend.
All right. Well, Nick, I will of course see you. We'll talk later today. I'll see you maybe tonight at the restaurant. And everybody, thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. Follow us on Instagram. Follow us on Twitter. Continue your support. We really appreciate it. And we will talk to you all next week. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the football. Enjoy the weather. And take care.
See ya.